Welcome to the Short Term Show, the show about short-term rentals and long-term wealth, with real property owners hosting real properties who are crushing it in the vacation and short-term rental space. And here's your host, Avery Carl.
Hey, y'all, welcome back to another episode of the Short Term Show. As always, I'm your host, Avery Carl. We have a really cool guest today. We've got Erica and John Larson. They own short term rentals in both the Smoky Mountains and Branson, Missouri, and they've got a lot of stuff going on with it. So I'm really interested to talk to them today. How's it going, guys?
Good. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. Love it. Erica, I know Erica very well. She's done different jobs here for us at the shop here and there. But anyway, Erica and John, just introduce yourselves to our listeners and tell us a little bit about how you got into real estate and specifically short-term rentals.
Sure. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. Basically, I still have a W-2. I've been at the same company for 30 years now. I'm a vice president of sales and marketing. And at the end of 2021, that company that was originally owned by two owners, very good friends of mine, sold off to private equity and kind of just made me open my eyes a little bit that, you know, don't get me wrong, love those guys still, but basically worked all those years to make them a lot of money and myself not as much. So just kind of changed the mindset and we wanted to build something ourselves. We've always been Airbnbers, Vrbos before it even existed, vacation a lot, rent houses and things. And kind of we're always like, man, I'd love to have one. We'd love to do it ourselves. So my W-2 job is kind of changing gears like that really pushed us into actually doing that.
Then I really started pushing.
Yeah.
I thought it had working, but then when that happened, I'm like, you see?
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
And then go ahead with your.
So I was a teacher for a long time, taught STEM, science, technology, engineering, math, and loved teaching, but not a whole lot of free time in it. Like, you know, get a personal days and yes, everybody's like, oh, you get the summer off, but not really. You're still going into work and stuff. At least I was. For me, it was more, I wanted to have some freedom and some flexibility and be able to do and go places, you know, as a family and with him, you know, before I retired was hopefully a goal. So, did that and then started, we bought our first one. I was still a teacher during that time, bought our second one. And after we got our second one, that's when kind of things started getting a little busy. And that's when I left my teaching position, which, you know, we can kind of dive more into how that was leaving, since I know a lot of people always ask me that. They're like, what was that like when you guys actually did that? But it took, you know, before we got to that point, there was a lot that we did to get to there. So it wasn't something that just like happened overnight.
I think that is a very good call out. So first of all, I just want to say thank you for teaching because you guys do not get paid enough. Now that my kids are in elementary school, and it's not just the teaching of the children, but the managing of the parents. Parents are crazy and they beat you to death. And we haven't had any problems with any of our teachers, but I see other parents and I'm like, dude, why are you acting like this to her? And it's crazy. So thank you for doing that.
And to that point, that experience translates so well to guests in vacation properties. dealing with either 5-year-olds or dealing with parents, and it's her skills from that has translated very well to what we're doing.
Guests on vacation.
No doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. But I want to hear about the period leading up to leaving your job, because everybody says, I'm going to do X, Y, or Z, whether it's buying a short-term rental, starting a business, doing all these things to quit my job. But many people skip the leading up to the quitting. So tell me about that.
So we bought our first one in the Smokies and we closed in July of 2022. As a lot of your listeners know, and you know, that was a tough time to buy. Things were going quick. Very hot market at that time. But we did find something we liked. It's been successful. We love the property so much so that we wanted to continue on and get another one. Took us, you know, we didn't do any of the tax savings. Actually, we still haven't yet. We're going to take tax savings on both our properties this year for the 2025 tax year. But yeah, so we were just, we kind of wanted to make sure this was going to work before we got too crazy with it. And one point is, though, you do have to have a little bit of risk. I initially went into buying our first Smokies property with a $350,000 budget. And in 2022, we were finding outhouses and sheds. And I mean, it was way too low. So it's like, and the reason I did that was I was like, oh, if we have no renters, I want to make sure we can make all the payments. You can't really go into it with that mindset. You have to take some risks to be able to do this. So we did that. We bought that property. It's been working well. We saved some money from that property and then had enough for a down payment again in 2024. So again, we didn't take out a different kind of loan. We actually saved some money to do our second down payment. But that, at that time, it wasn't going to take up a lot of her time with doing the, you know, run pricing, answering guests. She was trying to teach a class, and irate guests was, you know, texting and stuff.
Well, I got like 25 kindergartners running around with scissors. Oh,
so she actually taught 1 year, you know, doing both, and then you can kind of take the rest. We put the plan in place that we need to have you stop teaching full time.
Yeah.
So what are we going to do?
Yeah. And but I kind of want to backtrack a little bit before we like get to that point, though, because I want people to also know, like, again, there were things that happened before that time came that you have to roll with some of the punches, but you also have to have some grit and accept that sometimes things are going to be hard and not necessarily go the way you planned. When we first decided we were going to get an STR, we made an appointment. We had been listening to your podcast. We read the book, the first book, and we made an appointment and we had to cancel that appointment. I forget what happened. For some reason, we couldn't come. We were supposed to meet with you. And I was like, oh, no. But we weren't able to do it. And John has a cousin who has long-term rentals in Chicago. And she was like, oh, well, let's, I know this other, you know how sometimes realtors have like cohorts?
Referral partners.
Yeah. She's like, yeah, I know this, you know, person down in Tennessee. I'll hook you up with her. And she knows all about short-term rentals and she'll help you out. So we got hooked up with her and, you know, we learned the hard way why it is so important to start with the right people, like people who know the market, who know what works, what doesn't work, and who aren't just, you know, trying to push a property. So
what happened?
Yeah. Oh, okay. So we have a list of stuff. But yeah, basically, hire someone. If you're doing an SDR, make sure they know how to do short-term rentals. If it's long-term rental, make sure they're experts in that. But basically, the first, because it was 2022, the first property that we won under contract, we put an offer in, she basically said, you should just get the inspection. Don't even do a home inspection.
The market's too hot.
If
you do a home inspection, you're going to lose it like that.
Oh, wow.
And it seemed weird at the time, but we did it. Went to visit the property, still liked the property. But in my head, I'm like, I'm not going to do an inspection. Like, I don't care that we wrote it out. I'm going to spend the $500. I want to figure out what's wrong.
And there were even some things that were like, just looking at it, I was like, why wouldn't you have that inspected? It was on a downslope. Yeah. And you could see that the construction that had put the road in there had put like a little concrete berm. So obviously there must be water runoff coming down the road towards the house. They're trying to redirect it. I'm like, why wouldn't we do an inspection?
But basically we did it and it turned out the foundation was crap, like completely needed to be redone.
The inspector came to us and he goes, I'm not supposed to say this, but I'm telling you, do not buy this house.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Luckily, we actually got our way out of that. Yeah, even got his money returned. That was good. So then we found another property we really liked. We also wrote an offer for that one. And I asked our realtor, three different times, even in LFX, are you sure this is zoned properly for short-term rentals? because it kind of seemed too good to be true based on the prices. She answered me, yes, yes, it is. And we were driving home back to Chicago from Tennessee, and I still had that too good to be true feeling. So I did my own research, and it actually was a lot easier than I thought. Calhoun County found out that what we just won in the contract for was not zoned for short-term rentals. We wanted to withdraw our offer. They were going to sue us for the earnest money. Luckily, we got out of that one as well. Didn't have to pay the earnest money, got our check back. But that's when we decided, you know, two strikes, you're done.
Well, there was a third one too, because then she started showing us
condos,
like the small condos off the strip that have the, you know, water parks and everything. And this is a great deal. This is a great deal. But, you know, not showing us the, that they're going to, you have to be with their management company. I think
The one we looked at, they took 50% and you could not self-manage. You had to go with their company. So there's no way you're going to make the numbers work with that. So
I had a listing in that condo building once, and that was so tough to get sold because of that, because people just want options. Even if they don't want to self-manage, you want to at least be able to leverage, okay, well, I'm going to use another property manager if you don't perform well. And there's no in buildings like that or neighborhoods like that where you have to use a certain property manager, they have no incentive to do a good job. It's crazy.
Yeah. So, you know, so yeah, three strikes. And then we were like, she's done, we're not fired. So we did. Then we had the meeting with you, started with short-term shop. Went much smoother. We found a place, and kind of want to make this point too, like, just because you hire someone that's, you know, it is the right fit, it's working. Remember that realtor is also working for a bunch of other people. So you still got to do the work. Like we were up early every morning looking for new listings ourselves, and that, you know, even if you have a realtor working for you, remember they're working for other people too.
It's
so
it's a team.
Put in your own work as well. And that proved beneficial because we found the cabin we really liked in the Smokies on our own. But then once we found that, we turned it kind of over, you know, the help of the short-term team, and they were, it was night and day from the other realtor.
Same day walkthrough, and just pointed out what was good, like what is going to make this place work, the potential for different things, just so many tips along the way, not just here, sign on the dotted line.
And I asked the realtor like 10 times if it was zoned correctly for short-term rentals. She's like, why are you so worried about this? I'm like, believe me.
A really good reason.
Yeah. But anyway, so that worked. And then we were excited. We got started in it. And probably 3 months later, we get a letter in the mail from our old realtor trying to collect her commission on the cabin we bought.
Oh my gosh.
We didn't use her. So she's trying to collect $18,000 check from us. It's just like, so we had to hire a lawyer to back her off. It didn't cost us too much. It didn't take much. But
it was awesome, though, because our realtor called you and told you what was going on, and you responded. And I was like, cool. Like, you know, you actually, like, responded. And you said something like, if I was paid for every deal I didn't close, I'd be that was your response. And I'm like, good point.
Oh my goodness.
Being the queen. Any one of those could have turned someone away and said, why am I doing this? Forget it. Throw your hands up in the air. But your journey will never be like, there weren't chapters in your book about what we dealt with specifically. Everyone's going to have their own kind of little journey, and you have a bunch of bumps in the road. If we knew, you know, what we know now going through it, we would have saved tens of thousands of dollars difference. But you have to learn some of that as you go.
There's always going to be bumps and you know, something's going to break after closing. It'll be an air conditioner or a water heater or your first guest is going to have something really crazy that's never going to get. And that happened to us, our very first guest ever. It's always something, and it's how you handle it and move through it that determines whether you're going to be successful or not.
Yeah. Our very first guest at the cabin was the worst guest we've had still to date. 4 years later.
I was like, what can we do?
Yeah. But yeah, you're good.
I think we were throwing chairs off the balcony. We could see him off the driveway. I'm just like, But, you know, it was no serious damage done. Just like just not, you know, you don't expect that right off the bat. But at the same time, the more we've had experiences like this, it really is true that the smarter you get, and the more educated you are and the thicker skin you have. And, you know, then when these things happen again, it's not a freak out anymore. It's okay. Here's what we do. Move forward.
And it also made us market our property differently, like right away. We're like, okay, we don't want college kids. We don't want, you know, there's a college, University of Tennessee is closed. We had some of that traffic. We completely changed the marketing to families and kids. And it's worked really. We don't have the party atmosphere at all.
That's good.
Yeah. So learned that one too. But then, yeah, so that was our first one. And then got that up and running and really made it kind of a, and this is something I do tell people when I coach them too, is like, you got to make your cabin or your property one of one. That doesn't mean we need slides coming out every window. No, we don't have to go crazy like that. Mm. But you have to have something unique within it. And I mean, these can be very simple things. I mean, I've talked about them with Luke before in coaching, like the Nerf gun wall or, you know, our little rock painting station, or these don't have to be giant, enormous things, but they create a vibe and an experience. So that when we started getting ready to get our second one, we really kept that in mind. Like, okay, who's the avatar? Let's not just throw this thing out to everybody like we did the first time, because we learned from that. And how are we going to differentiate property? Because the second one we knew was going to be a condo in Branson.
Well, how did you know that? Let's talk about that. How did you go from a tap Smokies to a condo in Branson?
Yeah, the biggest reason for the move was just the market in the Smokies was really out of control at that point, and just high price. And then along with the higher interest rates at that time, we were looking, Branson was still very well traveled, set up, I think it's 8 million tourists a year. So still a lot of travelers.
It's been a
tourist industry forever. And it also allowed us to do a 10% vacation home loan in that market by moving markets. So that was one of the deciding factors as well. So. Just we love the Smokies. We would have done it again, but the pricing is at the time was still out of control for what we felt. Couldn't find a deal.
Yeah, Branson is one of the most affordable short-term rental markets out there. I feel like it is so overlooked in terms of what it is. Like, it really is great. And it's one of the few markets where you can still get stuff for under $300,000 and still do well with it. I don't know why more people don't have Branson on their radar.
Yeah, it's done really well for us. We're consistently booked. We don't have problem guests. It's easy. It was an easy transition too, because Branson is very much like the Smokies. I mean, they got the same King Kong hanging off the side of the building
and the Titanic
and like every, it's almost exactly, you know, so it was an easy transition.
I think what people don't realize too, it stays pretty strong through the fall and winter seasons. Yeah. They have their fall festivals. They have their winter festivals. They have a lot of, I heard a stat, I think they have the most live theater seats, second only to New York City. There's all these different theaters and shows that people come for. So yeah, it stays strong. It drops off a cliff in January, February. A lot of markets do. April's terrible for Branson for whatever reason too, where it's a little stronger in the Smokies. But the summer is fantastic. We do better in the summer in Branson than we do in the Smokies. It's crazy.
Oh, wow.
Thank you for listening. We sincerely hope that you find value in this podcast. We would love it if you would use our team to purchase your next vacation home. We sell houses in all of the best vacation markets in America, and we want to earn your business. Reach out to us anytime at theshorttermshop.com, stsconsultation.com. That's theshorttermshop.com. This program has been brought to you by The Short Term Shop. The Short Term Shop is the premier residential vacation home agency. We have a large following and we work hard to ensure our clients' happiness. If this sounds like a good fit for you, we are hiring real estate agents. We are currently hiring in Outer Banks, Shenandoah, Virginia, Galveston, Crystal Beach, Texas, and the East Tennessee Smoky Mountains. Email us careers@theshorttermshop.com. That's careers@theshorttermshop.com.
So tell me about your Branson deal and what you paid for it and what it's doing.
Yeah, so we bought a three-bedroom, three-bath condo out there. It's actually, we have a loft that we kind of counted as a fourth bedroom, even though it's not enclosed. So it sleeps 12. We bought it for $420. And we do about $65K to $70K out of that property.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
We are, we're in a established kind of, it's not a resort, but it's a neighborhood.
Yeah.
That's on, it has a golf course and it's right along the river. So there's fly fishing and things. And, again, our realtor helped us significantly with this. Location within the community is perfect. We're on hole one of the golf course. So you walk right up to the clubhouse and the pool and the pickleball courts and all that. And then it's also a 5-minute walk down to the river where you can fish and do things like that. So with not only location within Branson, but location within the community is like perfect. And I think we get a lot of traffic from that.
And sure. We had like three different properties on our radar. And I remember our agent was like, this is the best community. Like this, if I was choosing between these three, he was like, this is why. And he kind of laid it out and it's proven to be absolutely correct. Mm-hmm. So, because I've seen some of the other properties, you know, you got your enemies list up and, mm-hmm. In the other areas and we consistently outperform the other ones that we had looked at. So,
And it's almost turnkey. All we did was rip out all the carpet and put in the vinyl flooring, which made it look a lot
nicer.
Yeah, the furniture was terrible. Did some furniture.
I'm pretty sure I had this in 1985.
But yeah, I was a little skeptical on condo, but Branson market is a lot of condos. But man, now having one, it's like you don't have to worry about anything outside your walls. So all the landscaping, things like that, the grounds are all taken care of by the HOA. So
yeah, it's kind of nice. And I mean, that's something to consider too. If you know you're looking in the Branson market, like yes, we pay our HOA, and it's not the most cheap thing. But I remember when we had a huge snow there last year, and the snow got stuck in the grooves of our roof and water started coming in through the roof into the master bedroom. And I didn't have to call anybody. The maintenance noticed it coming in on different roofs like that. So they went in, knocked on, the doors, called us, anybody there? Nope. Went in and checked. Sure enough, there was a leak. They had it fixed the same day. There is something to be said about, yes, you're paying an HOA, but there's a lot of things then that are off your plate.
Yeah. And with rehab too, with condos, it's so easy when you're buying a condo. If you find a good building, because you don't want to buy a good condo in a building that looks like crap when people drive up. That happens a lot. I've seen it in Panama City Beach. There's one that one influencer has bought in and that's telling everybody to buy, and the building is absolute garbage. But if you find the right building that looks nice when people drive up and you find the top performer in that building, well, you now know what a good property in this building is capable of doing. So turn around and go buy the worst, cheapest unit and fix it up, because you're not having to do any structural stuff. It's all cosmetic when you're updating a condo. So to me, that is the easiest way to kind of do the enemy method. If you're too scared, if you're really nervous, well, if you're in a building, let's say you're on the same floor, same, let's call it beachfront or gulf front, same view. You already know what the top is. So buy the worst one and make it look like the one at the top.
Yep. Yeah. And that, I mean, I love doing that stuff. So for me, when I see those, it's like, I've got to get my hands on it. We just saw one in the Smokies that we both found online. It was a little honeymoon suite, because we might round back to the Smokies this year. Mm-hmm. We'll look at it. But yeah, same idea. I'm like, okay, this is a great price. No, it's not a gem right now, but it could be.
Yeah. Yeah. As long as it has the fundamentals, in the Smokies, it's a cabin, it's in the right area. I mean, with tongue and groove, there's only so much you have to update.
Yeah. So Yeah. So that was our, then that was the point then where we kind of round back to, okay, now I can leave teaching. And the reason that that happened was because it did start to get difficult to manage classroom, kids running around while I've got even a couple properties going. You know, a guest will message you at noon. I can't wait until 3:30 p.m. to message them. And, you know, as a teacher, you're not supposed to be on your phone.
Right.
You're like watching that and like, no, sit down, be quiet. You know, it just doesn't work. So then we had like a serious discussion about, okay, what are our goals? And way back when we first started, we used to put post-it notes on our mirror. About, okay, where do we want to be in 6 months? Where do we want to be in a year? And we really followed that to the point when we got Branson. And then we didn't have any more post-it notes on the mirror. It's like, okay, well, what do we do now?
Post-it note when you hit the goal?
Yeah. We would take it off.
Well, she's talking like bathroom morning mirrors. Yep. You're seeing that morning, night, you're seeing those set of goals.
Right in front of me all the time. Yeah.
I love that. We do the glass chalk on the bathroom mirror. So we also do that.
Our kids do that themselves. So we hit those first two big goals, which was first SDR in 22, second one in 24. Then we kind of like, wow, we need some new goals. Mm-hmm. And one was to get you out of teaching full time.
Yeah.
And that kind of coincided with our neighbors in the Smokies saw what we were doing, saw our traffic, and asked us to co-host or basically manage their property. They're 70 plus, you know, older couple, and just they had a cabin.
Really sweet.
A cabin rental company that wasn't taking care of them. They asked her, we said no a couple times, weren't interested. But then as the whole thing about replacing a teacher's salary in a kind of more shorter time frame. And we're like, you know what, let's give this a whirl. And she got into it and it went well and she liked it. And a year later, she's got 13 properties under management for co-hosts. So again, we talked about detours and kind of things in the road that wasn't expected, but it was something that we could get to a goal quicker. You know, just based on doing that because of the higher interest rates still and, you know, not as many deals out there. So we went that path and, she's making more now co-hosting than her teacher salary in a 12-month time.
And it's all, what I like is it's all like in one direction. So it makes it a lot easier than, you know, yes, there were several months there where we were pretty hard on money because I didn't have, you know, any clients. We were trying to figure this out, trying to build something. But the balancing back and forth between the two made it hard to do that. And that came back to sometimes you just got to take the risk.
Yeah.
So we decided we're going all in and no matter what, we're going to make it work. And, you know, it's definitely scary at first. But the risk is worth the reward and you've got to persevere and you've got to push through it. And it's so funny. I always think all the time, I used to tell my students that I've been teaching myself, you know, so, you know, sometimes you ask, what would you have told yourself, you know, 20 years ago, you know, when you started, you know, and I always think I should have been listening to what I was telling my students. Should have been working on that.
Well, I love that. And you're not getting yelled at by parents and kids aren't misbehaving all day and dealing with that.
We could have a whole day on stories that I could tell you about some things that went down.
Sure.
Hey, didn't you have a sixth grader that was upset that you were married?
No, he was 6-year-old.
Or 6-year-old. Yeah.
Yeah. He came up to me and he asked me, he's like, Miss Larson, are you married? And I said, yes. And he kind of puts his head down and he looks back up. He goes, are you like really, really married? Yeah. And I'm like, I don't know. And I'm like, yes, I'm really, really married. And he goes, so you like love your husband and your kids. I'm really married. I'm like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, yes, I'm really married. And he goes, okay, never mind.
Never mind.
I'm like, I just thought it was the cutest thing. I'm like, no, honey, we're not.
Oh, bless his heart.
You know, so it's sweet. But yeah, so that, but it's just funny how, you know, those things do correlate to where I am now, and they do carry over with what I'm doing now. So it's been a great experience, but I always go back to, you know, you have to surround yourself with the right people, not just who you're working with, but also like the group you're learning from. Mm-hmm. So when, during this time, as I was leaving, Luke actually contacted me, and that was when he asked if I would like to be a coach. And I absolutely wanted to do it. And I've learned so much from being a part of that group as well. So surrounding myself with people who are also within the same industry with the same, you know, positive like attitude. And yes, things might not work one time, but we can fix it and we can do it better the next time. I think that's just as important as surrounding yourself with the right business people.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely is. And yeah, it's just, my friend group is totally different now. I mean, probably for a lot of reasons, since I've been doing this for 10 years. So, you know, the 5 years of stranger rule that people you're friends with now will probably be strangers to you in 5 years. But it's the type of person that I'm friends with is so different now than it was when we first started. And I don't know if that's the same for you guys, but, you know, you find the people who also are not necessarily doing the exact same thing as you, but are building and working towards something. And it really does make a difference who you surround yourself with.
Yep. Yeah. And you're right. We have noticed that within the past several years. It's a different flow of people.
It really is. Well, guys, we are coming to the last three questions of the show. And before we do that, though, I do want to backtrack to one question that I had back to before you bought your first one. So a lot of people are like, how do I save up the money to do this? So were there any strategies that y'all used when you decided, okay, I think we want to invest in real estate? Did you, you know, pull stuff out of 401ks or did you save up? How did that work to find that first down payment and the second down payment?
Yeah, so we did do a HELOC. We took out a HELOC against our primary residence for the first down payment. And it worked well. It started at 4% at the time, which is great. That was adjustable, so it was increasing. So I would just say, if you do that, you want to make sure you're either accounting for that in your monthly payments, or you do pay it off, you know, rather quick. We let it go for a couple of years just because we were investing back into that cabin. We were making improvements and whatnot. So still, basically taking the money that would have been a cash flow and investing it right back in the property and not paying down the HELOC. But that HELOC is now gone. So I would just say, again, we talked a lot about this during this discussion. Have a plan. You know, if you're going to do a HELOC, have a plan for when you're going to use it for, when you're going to pay it off. Because if you don't, that could be basically another partial mortgage payment sitting there that you weren't accounting for. And then the second loan we did save up for. I also invest in some stocks and things. So I would say it was about half and half. We took some money from that we were cash flowing from the properties. And then I also took some from my investments and made that down payment for the condo.
Okay. So HELOC and then just saving, maybe pulling a little bit from investments. And I think it's what you said about paying the HELOC back immediately is so important. Most of the people who I saw get in trouble are people who will come to us and say, hey, I'm not making any money. And I look at what they paid and what their income is. I'm like, how are you not making money? This thing's doing great. Is almost always because they have a big HELOC on the side that they didn't budget. They're trying, which a HELOC, if it's big enough, is almost like buying two houses. You know, people are taking $500,000 HELOCs and buying $750 million houses. And that becomes like an entire other property. So you're now basically asking one property's income to pay for two properties 100%. And that's just, you might be able to squeak by, but I mean, you really have to make sure if you're going to get a HELOC that you're able to pay that HELOC out of your primary income and you're not trying to get a property to pay for two mortgages, because that's just going to be really tight.
No.
Yep. Yeah. And we had a lot of discussions about that because we knew it was, we didn't I think ours was 40.
We took 75,000. Okay, so not a huge number, but
yeah, we planned for it. So yeah, and then the second one, once we really get, like, we took those 2 years and really made the cabin unique, like I talked about, and really made it stand out and different. And then we were really cash flow. So even investing money back
on your Smokies property, actually, I only asked about Branson.
Yeah, the purchase price for the Smokies was $590,000. And we do about 80 to 85,000 out of that property.
Okay.
It's great. 2 bedroom, 2 bath.
Yeah, 2 bedroom, 2 baths.
Okay. So good. Cool prop. We really liked it though, because it was, it's on 3 acres. Right. But we're only about 18 minutes from the strip, and it's up high, but it came with flat land. So we were like,
we put a full playground.
Which would really do
something. Land, yeah.
Yeah.
Ninja tower and swing sets. And
that was our put back in cool. To make it different. Yeah.
So it does have a view, but it also has a lot of area for the kids to run around, not just to drop off a cliff.
Right. Because there's a lot of people falling off cliffs lately. Like in the news, there's been 2-3 in Utah at different places in the last 2 or 3 weeks. So I don't know what that is, but I hope that the falling off cliffs trend stops.
About 3 weeks ago Mount Lecoq.
Trails up.
What? It happened in the Smokies? Somebody fell off
Mount Lecoq? 3 weeks ago, an older lady, a loon trail.
I think it was.
Yeah. Headed up to Mount Lecoq.
Yeah. I just don't know about this. This is not a trend falling off cliffs that needs to continue.
No. And I mean, I've done that trail, and I was trying to think in my head, I'm like, there are a couple where if you're, you know, doing a selfie and not really paying attention to what's behind you, yeah, you know, it's still hiking. It's still a mountain. Yeah.
Gosh. It's just situations I'm not going to put I don't need to hike Angel's Landing in Utah. I just don't. I've seen all these videos now that person fell off a few weeks ago. And I'm like, But people love it. People do it. It's the second most visited national park after the Smokies. So,
I did not know that.
Yeah, it is. So, all right. No more falling off cliffs. Now we are going to move on to the final 3 questions of the show. We ask everybody these questions. First one. What advice would you give 20-year-old Erica and John if you knew then what you know now?
From my standpoint too, like, have a plan. I had a lot of fun in my 20s, but I just kind of wandered around aimlessly. I would go back and say, put together a plan with some goals, and you're going to enjoy your 30s and 40s much more.
I totally agree with that. Like, we did. We had a great time. In our 20s, no doubt. But looking back, had we thought about where we wanted to be 15 years from that point when we were, you know, 23, it would have been completely different. So, yeah, a little more forward thinking, I think. Yeah.
Don't we all wish we were more forward thinking at that point in time? All right. Question number 2. What advice would you give a new short-term rental investor who's looking to get started today?
I would say we talked a little bit about this, but you know, there's a lot of knowledge out there right now, a lot of information. Get educated, and then surround yourself with the right people too. There is a lot of knowledge out there, but it could, you know, not all of it's great. Some of it's people just pumping their websites and things like that. But get educated, find the right people, surround yourself with those people, and learn from them.
Yep, and you know, spend some time. I actually say this a lot to the people I'm coaching. I'm like, you know, you don't have to buy the first thing you see. You know, take some time. It's a smart decision. It's a good decision, but you want to make sure that you're making the best decision. So, you know, don't rush into it. I'm not talking get like analysis paralysis, but I do see a lot of people who will come to coaching and they'll be like, oh, I'm going to buy like 5 in the next 6 months. And I'm like, okay, let's make sure we get the first one right.
They get ahead of themselves.
You don't get the first one right, you could be stuck.
Yeah, there's no second one if you don't do the first one right.
Exactly.
No second one.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And last question, what's your favorite book that's impacted your mindset?
I'll take this. The book I kind of read, it was Rich Dad Poor Dad, after we decided to take this leap. And it really just kind of confirmed what I was thinking, which was good. But really that transition from my W-2 company selling off really affected my mindset more than anything. I read Rich Dad Poor Dad after that, and it just confirmed a lot of the thoughts that I was thinking anyway.
And for me, it goes back to teaching kids. It's a children's book. Sorry. But it's Dr. Seuss, Oh, the Places You'll Go.
Mm,
and I would read that to my kindergartners. I read it to my fifth graders. And I think about it all the time because there's so many references in that story. You know, sometimes things are good and sometimes they're not. And, you know, you have to keep climbing forward. You have to keep going to that mountain, have that grit, have that perseverance. And if you do those things, oh, the places you'll go, you know.
Love that. Nobody said that one yet. I love that you referenced that one. That's a good one. My kids love that one.
Yeah, I love that story.
Awesome. So last question, if our clients want to, our listeners want to find you, follow you on social media, how do they do that?
Yeah, our little company is called the Change Your Latitude Properties. And we have, that's our Instagram hashtag. And our company is, like, if you want to check out the whole thing, it's cylprentals.com. And there you can see our properties. You can see properties we manage. You can see a little story about ourselves. Our Instagram has, you know, funny videos of us down in Pigeon Forge doing stupid things too. So it's not all business. It's got to be fun.
Yes. And if you want to be coached by Erica, you can join Short Term Shop Plus and you get to hang out with all of us and you can have Erica as your coach. So definitely check that out. You can find it on the shorttermshop.com or stsplus.com to sign up. Thanks, y'all. We'll catch everybody next week.
Thanks, yeah. Avery.